can't be good. This is the New Artist Feature here on HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Bobby Gales. I'm out.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, Sirius XM Channel 142, HBCU, and Sirius XM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
You're listening to The Traveling Culturati, exploring the style and culture of travel with travel pro Javon Harley, exclusively on HUR Voices.
Well, hello, fellow Culturati. Javon Harley here, travel pro and host of The Traveling Culturati on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. The website, travelingculturati.com. Traveling Culturati is brought to you by South African Airways, a Star Alliance member and Africa's most awarded airline. Visit online at flysaa.com. Well, today I'm chatting with Norma Schweitzer, resident of Nicodemus, a small town with a big history. We've also got Javon's Travel Minute, the question of the week, and the culture report. It's heading to Japan. But right now, I've got some travel news. Well, Condé Nast Traveler interviewed flight attendants for tips on complaining effectively. If you need a flight attendant's assistance, try addressing them by their name or as a fellow human being and less like a servant. If you have a complaint, start with, "I know this isn't your fault, but I have a complaint. Whom can I direct it to?" Ticket agents, gate agents, and flight attendants take crap from people all day who think they have been wronged. But chances are the person you're about to vent to isn't the person who caused your problem. Filing a complaint online or in a post-flight survey are both good bets. But if you want in-person conversation, try a gate agent and ask for a supervisor. If your bag is lost, say, "I know you're doing your best, but it's important. Can I get my luggage by this time? Or can you help me?" And if you want a better experience, try, "I know how hard you guys work." Compassionate travelers usually benefit. So do those bearing gifts. As a customer service representative and provider myself, I concur. It's always best to treat people like you want to be treated. What are the worst hotel etiquette offenders? Expedia's recent survey revealed the worst hotel etiquette offenders. 1,000 respondents who participated in the survey ranked amenities they love and people they loathe when staying at hotels. Based on the results, price is the top consideration. Complimentary Wi-Fi ranks second, followed by location, reviews, and parking options. And as for those people we don't like or who annoy us, inattentive parents top the list. Hallway hellraisers come in second. In-room revelers, followed by complainers, then bickerers, and then the loudly amorous. You have your poolside parties, hot tub canoodlers, business bar boozers, and then the elevator chatterbox. Inattentive parents are certainly at the top of my list. The others, well, they don't bother me so much. Unless, of course, you're just way out of control. I figure people are on vacation or at least away from their regular routine and just need to let loose. Angkor Wat, the Cambodian temple complex, is fed up with smoking, littering, and topless selfies. With concerns of a high volume of visitors and soil erosion, the temple has made major changes to be implemented in early 2017. Ticket prices for Angkor Wat will increase significantly. Another major change taking effect immediately is the dress code. Thanks to unscrupulous visitors posing nude or semi-nude at the temples, and these images went viral online. And understanding that the temple is still an active temple for Buddhists, travelers are now asked to cover their shoulders and knees at all times. Anyone wearing inappropriate clothing will not be allowed to enter. Angkor Wat is a holy site and should be treated as such. Well, American Airlines is making in-flight entertainment free. They've recently announced that it is joining Delta Airlines in offering all in-flight entertainment free. Delta began free in-flight as of July 1st. American Airlines is making their entertainment options available on existing in-flight entertainment systems, which are on about 300 of Americans' planes. Prior to the announcement, American Airlines offered limited selections of free movies and television on domestic flights and charged for premium shows and new releases as much as $4 to $8. Well, now travelers can choose from more than 160 movies, including 50 new releases, 300 television episodes, more than 700 music albums, and 20 games, which they can also access from their own device. American is now claiming to have the largest library of complimentary in-flight entertainment among U.S. carriers. Wi-Fi used to connect American's library will also be free, but travelers will still have to pay for personal storage. Are safety deposit boxes safe? Brad Reed, a traveler who often travels for business, did what most of us do when we check into our hotel room. He put his valuables in the safety deposit box, and unfortunately, he became locked out of the safety deposit box and had to call customer service for assistance. Hotel security arrived to enter their master code to unlock the safety deposit box, and what Brad discovered was alarming. The master code that was used to unlock the safe was 000000. All of the safes come with a factory master lock code, and the hotel, in this case, never bothered to change it to a unique code. To test his theory, he locked the safe with a unique code and then entered all zeros again, and voila, he was able to unlock the safe. So the next time you use a hotel's safety deposit box, try some simple codes before you leave your room to make sure the hotel hasn't left it unchanged. Unbelievable. It's amazing how careless some can be, especially with safety and security. Well, America is sleepy, folks, and coming up is National Relaxation Day on August 15th, and boy, do we need it. According to Princess Cruises' 7th annual relaxation report, Americans are using valuable vacation to catch up on sleep and running errands. According to the recent survey by Wakefield Research for Princess Cruises, 72% of working Americans take at least one day off a year just to sleep. 40% of Americans take five or more days off per year to catch some Z's. When Americans aren't sleeping, they're getting things done. Many say they used a vacation day for family emergencies, doctor's appointments, sick days for their children or loved ones, home projects, and running household errands. Sadly, vacation time is becoming filled with a to-do list, and vacation isn't on it. 43% of Americans admit they frequently feel guilty for relaxing. More than a third of working Americans often feel more stressed when they're on vacation because they can't stop thinking about work. We're all sleep deprived. Lack of sleep is affecting nearly half of Americans, with most admitting they frequently skip events or activities on vacation because they're simply too tired. Stress levels are high on vacation in every region except one. Working Americans in Northeast are at 43%, in the West, they're at 42%, and in the South, 33% are significantly more likely to feel more stressed on vacation because they can't stop thinking about work, more than those in the Midwest. That's 21%. It's clear that Midwesterners have no problem relaxing. Most agree, we're talking about 67%, that they never or hardly ever feel guilty about relaxing. And that's compared to an average of only 54% across other regions. When it comes to men versus women, the differences between the sexes, working women are far more likely than men to feel guilty about taking time to relax. However, among the Americans who take at least one day off per year to catch up on sleep, men take more days than women, 8 versus 7 on average. And we all need that digital detox. The role of technology and smartphones seem to have shifted from a source of stress to a source of relaxation over the last couple of years. In 2016, 53% of Americans feel their smartphone makes it easier rather than harder to relax. That's compared to 2014, where 52% felt it made it harder. And there's political pressures. This year has taken political stress to the next level, from the U.S. presidential election to the United Kingdom's historic Brexit. In fact, when it comes to Trump versus Hillary, more than half of Americans say Trump is more likely to keep them up at night. And Hillary comes in a close second at 46%. Well, no wonder things are going wonky around the world. We're all sleepy and we're cranky. What are the most dangerous cruise ports? We know that cruise passengers arrive at a cruise port for a short amount of time, and they're ready to explore the destination. And most of them have trouble-free trips, but some become victims of crime when they step off the boat. Cruise travelers are seen as easy targets because they usually have cash, they won't stay in town long, and they don't speak the local language. Based on the Global Peace Index from the Institute of Economics and Peace and security reports by the State Department's Bureau of Diplomatic Security and Bureau of Consular Affairs, the following ports are the most dangerous in the world. Colombia is actually the 17th most dangerous country in the world, according to GPI. They've had that long reputation for high crime rates, largely due to gang wars. They also have issues with bribery, extortion, drug trafficking, and theft. And those are the bigger concerns for tourists. Turkey comes in a close second. Now, the crime rates are pretty moderate in Turkey, but it's because of terrorist threats and suicide bombings that are mounting concern. Then there's Venezuela. Venezuela is one of the top 25 most dangerous countries in the world. And because of recent financial issues, they've only made it more unstable for locals and for visitors. They remain one of the most deadliest countries in the world, with an increasing violence and criminal activity resulting in unprecedented levels in 2015, according to the State Department. Egypt is ranked 22 as the world's most dangerous country. This, too, is according to GPI. Police can interpret people's actions very broadly, according to the State Department. In addition to civilian harassment, law enforcement officials may also take advantage of foreigners that are not used to the local customs. And because of civil unrest and sporadic sectarian violence, they're also a concern. Mexico. Mexico's crime rate still remains high. It's mostly because of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And violence then threatens personal safety. Homicides, assaults, and robberies have been major concerns for tourists since the mid-2000s, places like Acapulco, and there's reports of masked men robbing passengers at gunpoint on their way back to the ship. That's not uncommon. Mazatlan is a popular cruise port, but the crime rate there is very high as well, according to OSAC. The Philippines. There are a lot of cruise ships that dock in Manila, but crime is a significant concern in the urban areas. It's theft, physical assault, and robbery being most common crimes, according to OSAC. Lastly is Honduras. The level of crime and violence in Honduras remains critically high, although it has declined over the past 2 years, according to the latest travel warning issued by the State Department. Wherever you go, folks, you just want to make sure that you take precaution and you stay safe. safe. Well, that's all I have for travel news. And when we come back, we have Javon's Travel Minute, Nicodemus resident Norma Schweitzer, and the question of the week. So don't go anywhere. I'm Javon Harley with the Traveling Culturati exclusively on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141.
Hello, Blues fans. I'm Ed Williams, the host of Blues on Blues. And every week, Jessica Sturgis and I create a tapestry of jazz and blues and rhythm and blues and gospel just for you. We invite all friends of a blues to join us as we talk with real blues artists, introduce you to blues hits new and old, and give you a taste of history. Sound good to you? Then tune into Blues on Blues every Sunday from 2 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on HUR Voices, Sirius XM. Channel 141.
Waking up to the pulsating sounds of the Caribbean on a Saturday morning is simply irresistible. So check out Bobby Adams and Bobby's Music Machine at 6 for a Caribbean music mix of gospel, zouk, soca, compa, reggae, and a little something of everything else. The fun starts early on Saturdays at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. So set your alarm to listen to me, Bobby Adams, and the sounds of the Caribbean on Bobby's Music Machine, HUR Voices, SiriusXM, Channel 141.
This is Ricky Clements. If you're curious about professionals and their roles in the world of sports, then I want you to join me weekly for the Sports Insight right here on SiriusXM 141 HUR Voices. We ask the hard-hitting questions and take an inside look at the movers and shakers in the sporting world. So join me, Ricky Clemens, your sports insider, Saturday at 3 p.m. right here on SiriusXM Channel 141 HUR Voices.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. We leave no warrior behind. Wounded Warrior Project is a nonprofit organization created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war. Whether those scars are physical or mental, we're here to make sure that they heal. And whether it's helping those with post-traumatic stress disorder live a normal life again, or giving much-needed support to injured warriors and veterans hospitals, because no one deserves our help more than the men and women who risk their lives to keep us safe. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind. Ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
Foster care is supposed to be temporary. Unfortunately, as many of our country's children know, foster care can sometimes last as long as childhood. Many foster children are legally free for adoption, but on average, nearly two-thirds of foster children do not have a loving, permanent home. To find out how you can help, visit adoption.com.
Welcome back to the Traveling Culturati. I'm your host and travel pro, Javon Harley. Traveling Culturati is all about the style and culture of travel. And I want to make sure you visit the website because you can stay connected with me even when we're not on the air. The website is travelingculturati.com.
And now, Javon's Travel Minute.
We all know the importance of the boarding pass. We needed to get through airport security and to board the aircraft. But what about after you've boarded? What do you do with your boarding pass after you've boarded the flight? Well, if you're like most people, you no longer handle it with care, sometimes leaving it on the aircraft, throwing it away, or leaving it behind in your hotel room. Well, according to Krebs on Security, your personal information is stored on your boarding pass, encrypted in the QR code. And anyone with the right technology on their cell phone can scan that QR code and retrieve your personal data, like your name, date of birth, frequent flyer number, home address, phone number, email address, and flight information. And once some of your information is accessed, they can use that information to access other accounts and information. So keep that boarding pass with you and shred it when you get home. This is Javon, and that was your Travel Minute. Well, today we're heading to a small town in Kansas with a significant history that few people know about. It's named Nicodemus, and it's the only remaining Western town established by African Americans during the Reconstruction period following the American Civil War. And I have the honor and pleasure to chat with Norma Schweitzer, a descendant of one of the original settlers and a current resident of Nicodemus. Hello, Norma, and welcome to the Traveling Culturati.
Hello, how are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am so excited to be talking to you and to learn about Nicodemus. Where exactly is Nicodemus?
It's in the state of Kansas, in the northwest corner of the Graham County, and that's a county in Kansas, one of 105 to be exact.
Now let's talk about the settlement. Why and how Black settlers came to the town of Nicodemus?
Well, Lincoln had freed the slaves, and we had some visitors go to Kentucky. Reverend Roundtree and Hill was the other one. And the town that they located nearby or went into was near Sadieville, Kentucky. And they told these people about a possibility of some land and what it would take to get there. They had laid out like 160 acres in the town of Nicodemus, which is called the town site. And then there's acres of land in the township. So anyone that could get a fee of $5 to ride a train out of Kentucky, because that was the only transportation to get here, and that train took them to Ellis County and Ellis, the town, as well. And then they had approximately a 39 to 40 mile walk, which took them 2 days to reach the destination of Nicodemus.
Do you know why they chose Nicodemus?
At that particular time, it was land that you could mark off, and that's what those men did to give them that opportunity for anyone wanting to leave the South to be able to settle. There were other Black settlements in Kansas as well, but this one here was obviously the first one.
So the two gentlemen, Smith and Hill, who came to know about the town Nicodemus and that they could buy land and settle there, how did they get others to come to the town?
Well, the first settlers that actually came was about a total of 350 or more. And when they left Kentucky in September, they arrived during that same month of 1877. And these were farmers. They knew how to till the ground and grow crops. But when you arrive in a late fall, there's not much time for growing any type of food. So there were Indians out here during that time, and they were the Osage Indians. And they fed them, the slaves, during that first winter because, like I said, it was too late to grow crops. So they looked after them. And when spring came, then they were able to take care of their family. But now I know you're wondering, where did they live? They lived in dugouts. They managed to get those taken care of for their family that came with them through that two-day walk from Ellis to Nicodemus.
So when they first came there, there weren't homes already
No.
there. They just had the promise of the land itself, and they had to build everything from scratch.
That is correct. And there weren't any trees on the town site. And this is why you hear dugouts. These were, they actually dug into the ground and had lived by making a room or two rooms or whatever they needed to live in throughout the winter until they were able to get the material that they needed to start building.
To form a community, getting others to follow them and to come and to settle in Kansas or in Nicodemus to build that community. Let's talk about that.
After they got here, they had trustees and treasurers and vice presidents and so forth to set up offices so that people could purchase their land and then get it to the proper offices that they needed to so that they would have ownership. And during that time, businesses also occurred. There were schools, there were banks, there were mercantile, or what you want to call a general store back then, several, and churches. And this grew up from those people after they got what they needed and they started building. They had a newspaper. In fact, they had two. They had several churches, as well as school in the town of Nicodemus, and then two schools out in the township of Nicodemus.
What did people do when they came there? Could they buy and own land themselves?
Yes, they could. That was the purpose of setting up the office, to be able to capitalize on the purchasing of land so that it could be legally theirs.
What did the town grow to be? How many residents did they have?
It grew to over 1,000 during that time, because they had the stores, the banks, the schools, the churches, the businesses, everything that a large city would have basically back then, they had, and they were thriving. There was a livery stable, a blacksmith, and they were farmers as well. They had the products, and they had the ability to form all of these things and set up what they needed to make it thrive.
What was the main growth period? Over what time period did they build and form the communities?
Through the mid part of the mid-1880s, they were growing and prospering with the possibility of having a railroad come to Nicodemus. And they were scouting out areas, and they had a river that ran sort of east and west. And the railroad, when they were laying their rail, I'm thinking from Stockton, in that possibility over on the south side of the Solomon River. Nicodemus lies to the north side of the Solomon River, and there were other towns being developed. Looking at Nicodemus and having the possibility to have that railroad come here, that brought a lot of energy as well. But then something happened. The railroad changed their mind, kept their route to the south of the Solomon River, and that led it right into Bogue, Kent, during the late 1880s. Months as far down as 1888, it was prospering until that railroad did not come to Nicodemus. When it didn't happen, the merchants in the town of Nicodemus followed the railroad, and that's when it went bust. Some still tried to stay here and have businesses in spite of the railroad not coming to Nicodemus, and they managed, but overall, it just didn't go anywhere after that. They still had their government. They still had a post office here as well. The churches stayed, but things that people knew they needed the railroad for, they left.
Did that quickly dissipate, or did it happen over a longer period of time?
The merchants, the ones who needed the railroad, left quickly, as soon as they could, to get established on the railroad line.
Certainly. Well, did they think about any other ways of growing the town beyond having the railroad stop there? Any other campaigns?
They tried, but that railroad was like the catalyst that was going to make it the largest possible way for them to go to, where they needed to reach larger cities to the east and even those that were building toward the west. So by it not coming, it just sort of like they kind of gave up, the merchants, but the people stayed. The farmers, they had their land. They stayed, they farmed, they raised their children, and they had their schools. So they were getting their education. They had their freedom, and that was basically what they wanted. They wanted their freedom, and they wanted to hold on to what they had established, and that's with Nicodemus.
Let's talk about today and what Nicodemus is like.
Growing up here, there were still a lot of families, and then you could say there was another exit out in the 50s, this time moving to Denver. Denver was the city a lot of them picked. And then there were those who moved on to the state of California. And I got to see some of those families get in their cars, load up everything they had, children, wives, and all, caravan to the Los Angeles area, Pasadena area. Back in the early 50s, 1955.
Now, you say you got a chance to witness people leaving the town. What is your connection and heritage with the town of Nicodemus? Who are you a descendant of?
One of the first settlers that came in with the first group was a woman named Emma, and she was carrying a child. That child, born in 1877, the month of October. The day was on the 30th. And him and his siblings that followed after him, he became my great uncle. He had a family. That's how I'm connected to that first group that settled here. And then the second wave that came in, my great-grandmother and her mother were freed by Lincoln. All of these were slaves. All of them were freed by Lincoln. She came in to Nicodemus, just her and her mother. They were the only ones from the Broaden family in Kentucky, Ladyville, Lexington town, that arrived in Nicodemus. Then her husband, who was Alex Vandoval, was some 15 years older than she. He and his brothers come out of Indiana. Now, they weren't slaves. They had been in Colorado. They came back into Kansas, and he married my great-grandmother, and they settled in the township and raised five children, two men, four women. And my great-grandfather named his daughters after his sisters back in Indiana. And I got to know all of my great aunts and uncles before any of them perished on both sides of the family.
Well, it's really special that you know your history in that way, because so many of us don't have that same opportunity. And to be part of such a wonderful town and the history of a town must be very special. How many people are in Nicodemus today?
At this point in time, there is a population, and I'll say that with a smile, of 17, 10 being from the original settlers, and the others moving here through family connections.
And so with a population of 17,
yes.
What do you do in Nicodemus?
I call it my sleepy little hamlet. There are no businesses here. There are no schools anymore. When I was growing up, we had the post office, and the post office also served as our candy store. And then we had the grade school, which was district number one. And I finished from that grade school. I went from first grade to the eighth grade. We didn't have kindergarten back then. I was the last female to graduate from that school, and my brother was the last male to graduate from that school, and the school closed down when he was the last one to leave, which was 1962-63 school year. But you know, when my parents went to school, my dad went to school here in Nicodemus, my mom went to school in the township of Nicodemus, grade school. Now, I was talking with her, and her name is Ivalee Schweitzer, or Ivalee Vandoval Schweitzer. My father was Freddie. But for them, in order to go to high school, they had to take a state test to see if they qualified to go to the white high school, because there weren't any black high school in the township or the town site. So in order to qualify for further education, that's what they had to do. And they passed. Quite a few did. Then there were some that just said, oh, well, you know, we'll just go to work. And that's what they did. So it was an even combination of how you wanted to progress in their age group of growing up. And my mom just turned 87 July the 17th.
That is phenomenal. But now Nicodemus is now a national historic site, and it is the Nicodemus National Historic Site, part of the National Parks Association as well. And this is really what caught my attention to Nicodemus being on the National Park registration as a historic site. What landmarks are there now in commemoration of the original settlers?
They picture five landmarks that are still here. There is the hotel, which is known as the Fletcher Hotel. That's where the Schweitzers, Fred Schweitzer and Ora Schweitzer, my grandmother, my father's mother and father, lived and raised him, which we call the Blue House. Then there is the two churches, the AME, which is 1885, and the Baptist Church, which was built, I think, in 1907. And then the schoolhouse, 1918. And then we have the Township Hall, or the Visitor Center. And that was built through President Roosevelt's era, 1939. And it was built from the Native Rock that was quarried out of the ground here, just like the AME Church is the natural native rock, and the Baptist Church, and part of the Fletcher home is also of that native rock, but the school is of timber.
Now, please tell me that the other descendants, even those who moved away, still return sometimes, or at least you're passing that history down to the generations so that they know of the town and they know of the historic significance of the town as well, and they're staying connected to their roots.
Yes, we have what we call a homecoming every year toward the end of July, the last weekend in July. Sometimes it extends over into the first 2 days of August, depending on the calendar month and year. And everyone that had any family connection would come back. When I was a child and my folks were children growing up, we would have fairs. We would have the gypsies coming through. They would set up what we would call in the grove, which is about a mile and a half to the south across the Solomon River. There was a grove of trees, and everybody, they would go down there. Then it moved uptown, what we call uptown, Main Street of Washington. And the circus would come through with their rides. They'd have parades. They'd have vendors. People could buy stuff. And that progressed down from my parents and all the ones before them down to our day. And I got to see most of those people because some of them lived into the hundreds. And they watched us children grow up. They watched my parents. They watched us. A couple of them even got to see my children. So, and they intertwined with each other by marrying because it was still fresh back in those years. But when myself and others like myself that grew up here, we were double kin, triple kin. So when it came time for us to find our mate, we got our education and our parents, my parents and other parents, encouraged us to get on to establish more of a education for ourselves so that we could survive out here in this world. But we never forgot about Nicodemus. So we all bring our children back, our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, and all those, to answer your question for, we pass that down, and we have this homecoming celebration every year. And those who left come back, they don't miss. There's years between some of them returning, but they still manage to come back home. This town can swell from 17 to as high as 500 at any given point during the homecoming.
That is wonderful. That is so beautiful. Well, Norma, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been such an honor and a pleasure to learn more about Nicodemus. And I am really proud to know that this town exists, the history of it, and that it's still being honored today. And it is now a national historic landmark, the only remaining Western town established by African Americans during the Reconstruction period following the American Civil War. And it's still there today that you can pay homage to and that you can visit. According to the State Department, 36% of Americans own a valid passport. That means that an overwhelming majority, 64%, do not. I wonder if we randomly polled people in Chicago, how many would have a passport? This certainly sounds like a job for Mo.
Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go. And today, Javon, I got out in these streets and asked 20 people if they had passports. Out of the 20, 10 of them did not have a passport. That's 50% of the people I polled who do not have a passport. Back to you, Javon.
As always, thanks, Mo. America has one of the most powerful passports in the world. This power ranking system is based on the number of countries you can visit without having to obtain a visa. That means on a passport only. I wonder why 64% of Americans have never left the United States, or at least those we polled. Could you find out why, Mo? Mo, could you also find out why those without passports didn't have them?
Traveling Culturati with your girl, Mo, always on the go, and I have Lindsay. Lindsay, do you have a passport?
I do not.
Oh, my, Lindsay, why don't you have a passport?
I had one when I was a baby, and I never renewed it, so it's gone. So it's gone. Okay.
Do you like to travel out of the country?
I never have, besides Canada.
Is there a reason why you haven't traveled out of the country?
I don't know. Getting a passport seems like a huge headache. So okay. I never got it.
So the headache and all that just deters you from even going through the paperwork to even get one. So the whole sacrifice of not going out of the country doesn't really matter to you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, Lindsay. Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate you. Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go. And who do I have here?
Kay.
Kay, let me ask you a question. Do you own a passport?
No.
Can you tell me why you don't own a passport?
I'm too broke to go anywhere.
You're too broke to go anywhere? Well, I guess that'll stop anybody from going anywhere getting a passport. You're too dang on broke, right?
Absolutely.
Girl, I wish you luck on them finances, girl. Thank you for your time. Traveling Culturati with your girl Mo, always on the go, and I'm here with
Vincent.
Vincent, do you own a passport?
No, I do not.
Can you tell me why you don't own a passport?
I'm afraid to leave the country.
You're afraid to leave the country?
Yeah.
Is there a reason why you're afraid, Vincent?
I might never come back.
They gonna keep you?
No, I just might never come back.
Like, you're just gonna love it so much that you never come back?
Correct.
Then you probably need to get a passport, Vincent.
Why?
So you can go fall in love and never come back.
I don't want to do that. I got stuff here to do still.
Okay, well, I guess we can keep you in the States, Vincent. Thank you for your time. Javon, the people have spoken, and there are various reasons why they don't have passports, whether it's from non-renewal, no finances, or the fear of the unknown. Everyone has their own personal reasons, and now you're in the know with Mo.
When we come back, I've got the Culture Report. I'm Javon Harley with the Traveling Culturati on HUR Voices Sirius XM, Channel 141. Culturati host and travel pro Javon Harley. The 2016 WHUR World Tour takes us to Japan, a country steeped in tradition and culture, from the ultra-modern bullet trains to the incomparable shopping in Tokyo. Culturati will love it. This November 3rd through the 12th, we'll visit Tokyo, Kyoto, and Osaka. We'll stay in deluxe five-star hotel accommodations and enjoy excellent tours and cuisine. Sponsored by the Japan National Tourism Organization, United Airlines, and WHUR. The WHUR World Tour, Japan. Visit advantage-intl.com for details. Javon Harley here, your travel pro and host of Traveling Culturati, with the top reasons to visit Ghana: history, friendly people, Ghanaian hospitality, and unsurpassed natural beauty. Ghana has it all, but the top reason to visit Ghana is to join me and Advantage International. The wait is over. The dates are set. Join us in Ghana September 8th through the 16th. We'll start in the capital city of Accra and visit the W.E.B. Du Bois Center for Pan-African Culture. We'll follow the history of the slave trade and visit the infamous forts, castles, and slave dungeons on the Elmina and Cape Coast, September 8th through the 16th. Fly South African Airways, Africa's most awarded airline, nonstop from Washington, D.C., and stay in deluxe accommodations. Go to advantage-intl.com for complete details. That's advantage-intl.com. See you on the plane. Join Traveling Culturati and Advantage International for the once-in-a-lifetime trip to Washington, D.C. for the historic opening of the National Museum of African American History and Culture. The National Museum of African American History and Culture will be a place where all Americans can learn about the richness and diversity of the African American experience. Join us as we visit the museum. Enjoy a nighttime tour of the monuments. Our package includes air from Chicago, accommodations at the J.W. Marriott, tours, selected meals, and events. Go to advantage-intl.com for complete
information. Hi, I'm Hoda Kotb from NBC's Today Show.